Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is
Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast number 450. We are the Fight Disciples, and this is dedicated to the world of mixed martial arts. Lots to talk about, both in the UFC and PFL. You will have seen a little bit of news breaking in the last 24, 48 hours, depending on when you are listening to this, regarding a big boxing star crossing over into the world of mixed martial arts. But we'll get stuck into that a little bit later on. If you would like to subscribe to us, you could do it via iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for, and you can get us on our website as well, fightdisciples.com, for all Android feeds. Everything's on there, including all your social media stuff, and a link to our shop if you want to buy yourself a little bit of beer. Do you want to start with the Clarissa Shields news, or do you want to start with the fights at the weekend? I kind of like the Clarissa Shields information.
Yeah. Me too.
Because for those that don't know, Clarissa Shields, a lady that is a multi-weight world champion in the world of boxing, absolutely mopped up the game, clocked the game at 25 years of age, a double Olympic gold medalist from 2012 and 2016, assigned a contract with the PFL. She's going to continue fighting, obviously, in the world of boxing, but in April of next year, she's going to make her MMA debut in the hope that in 2022, she might join one of these Grand Prix's and get stuck in. Now, this narrative kind of took me a little bit by surprise when I heard it, but then the more I think about it, the more that it makes sense, because the UFC don't offer a 155-pound division for the females. The PFL do. I know that the narrative that we've spoken about on this podcast has always been about Clarissa Shields heading towards Amanda Nunes. But with Kayla Harrison, who is also a double Olympic champion in the world of judo from 2012 and 2016 from Team America, it kind of makes nice sense, doesn't it? You know, and there's some decent door knocking about for these girls, because if you win one of these tournaments, you get yourself $1 million. And if she mops up there, and at the age of 25, that's all she is right now, there's plenty of time to come over to the UFC to have a little bit of a knock later on. So I think this actually makes a whole lot of sense. And there'll be a lot of people throwing shade at it because, oh, a boxer coming over to MMA, blah, 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 blah. No, no, no. This is a boxer that has clocked the game. She's absolutely mopped up. There's no other challenges for her. She's cutting weight drastically in order to get more challenges. She's come down from, I think when she started boxing, she weighed about 190 pounds. She's currently down in and around the 160 pound category she's walking around. And therefore, cutting weight, she should be able to get down to 155. I think it makes perfect sense for Clarissa Shields.
It does, yeah. Unfortunately, you know, there's two ways to look at this. It makes absolute sense for her because, you know, it brings us back to the old argument, doesn't it? Female athletes are on a level playing field with men in mixed martial arts. The opportunities to headline events, to make money, to become built into pay-per-view stars are very much equal because it's an equal footing inside the octagon as well. So we've seen it before from the likes of Holly Holm. Holly Holm was a multiple-time world champion in boxing, multiple-time Ring Magazine Female Fighter of the Year. Something Clarissa Shields, I think, has achieved as well. Clarissa Shields achieved even more than Holly Holm as a pro boxer. But the opportunity to make money, the opportunity to become famous, the opportunity to maximize on your athletic ability is just far greater than mixed martial arts for female athletes than it is in boxing. You know, and this is Clarissa Shields, who's probably the second biggest earner in the sport, I'd say, probably after Katie Taylor.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if she's the highest earner, mate, because she's high. She is She was the first to do a pay-per-view on Showtime. There's a bigger audience in America. And the Katie Taylor thing, don't get me wrong, Katie Taylor won't be earning mega money. It's not mega money that Katie Taylor's getting paid, mate. We're not talking millions. And people need to understand this. The girls aren't earning millions. They're not earning AJ, though. That's not where these girls are at right now. So therefore, Clarissa Shields clocking the game and coming over, as probably that I'd said that she might be the highest earner in the world of boxing, shows exactly where boxing's at right now. And the temptation of winning $1 million in the PFL, if she ends up entering one of those tournaments, I think he's a big carrot.
Well, that's exactly what, you know, the PFL did this exact same thing, as you say, with Kayla Harrison. It took them 18 months. They signed Kayla Harrison. They gave her, I think it was 5 fights inside a year in the lightweight division, which isn't a stacked division for the women. They then did the women's lightweight tournament, which was a semi-final and final, which she won at the back end of last year, 2019, and earned herself $1 million. And now she's, you know, she's competing over Invicta, which is the women-only promotion, which is very much a feeder league for the UFC. She's competing as a featherweight. So what it did is it allowed Kayla Harrison the opportunity to compete at lightweight, to gradually bring her weight down, to basically be handed $1 million inside 18 months to fund her training, to fund her MMA transition. And then she's moved over to Invicta. And,
well, she's only over there for one fight. She's still a PFL fighter. She's been allowed to fight for Invicta because of, obviously, they're shut down this year, didn't they, the PFL?
Yes, of course. But you've also got to look at the fact that there is only one rodeo in mixed martial arts where you become a superstar. And Kayla Harrison is never going to be a superstar if she continues to fight in the PFL or have maiden fights in Invicta. What was critical for me is that her fight in Invicta in November last month was a featherweight debut. The UFC does have a featherweight division, currently ruled by Amanda Nunes. It's not the most stacked division. So if Kayla Harrison can continue at 145, then the transition, the opportunities to compete as a featherweight in the UFC and thus become a huge star are much greater. And I would expect exactly the same path of progression from Clarissa Shields. She will be given the right kind of opponent over the next 12 to 18 months before she wins the PFL tournaments, and then she will make the transition over and hopefully make the cut down, because as sensational as Kayla Harrison is, Clarissa Shields is, she is a big girl. You know, it's going to be tough for her to get anywhere near 145 pounds.
But unfortunately, Kayla Harrison's massive, though. She's a big girl as well.
That's what I mean. But it's taken 18 months, 2 years to get down. And it's going to take Clarissa. What I mean is, it's going to take Clarissa Shields time. But the good thing is, she's got time.
Yeah.
Because by signing with the PFL, she's not going to be thrown in at the deep end necessarily. And she can also, she needs time anyway. She needs 18 months, 2 years to refine her game and move over. And let's not be daft here. She's not moving into the UFC men's featherweight division, which is fucking absolutely full of career mixed martial artists. The women's game is still very light. So if you're an outstanding athlete and in the financial position to be able to train full time, that's why so many jiu-jitsu girls are moving into the UFC. And we're seeing them grow in front of our eyes. You know, they're not the greatest stand-up fighters, but they've got that jiu-jitsu game to fall back on, and they're building their experience in the UFC. Obviously, Clarissa Shields is the exact opposite of that. You know, she's got zero ground game at the moment, a very little kicking game, but 18 months, 2 years of full-time training to be forced making that progression. You know, I would imagine Clarissa Shields moving into the UFC in probably about 3 years' time. And in 3 years' time, a girl of her capacity and her financial situation, and the fact that she's Clarissa Shields and attracts some of the best training partners and coaches in the world, I would expect her to make a big move into the UFC as well. And then there's the opportunity to do much more crossover and much more, make a lot more revenue for her star power.
She could become the biggest female fight sports star that we've ever seen, because we've both interviewed her. We've seen her at many UFC events. We've covered her fights in the world of boxing. Whatever it is in this game, this kid's got it, man. She can talk the talk. She's absolutely magnificent at the media side of this game. The UFC and the world of MMA will absolutely lap that up. Lap it up. Yep. And she's proved in the world of boxing that she can do it. in the ring. Again, she's 25. This is a good thing. She's not 35 years of age, coming for a bit of a rodeo and a payday. She's 25 years of age, plenty of time to learn, plenty of time to progress. And like you've just said there, the key thing is that coming down in weight to 155 in the PFL, that's not a shark tank. There's no killers there.
No.
She's got plenty of time to learn, get used to being at that weight, and then maybe make that progression to 145. I mean, she can, and I'm not saying push yourself because you shouldn't be killing yourself to fight and make weight and whatever, but if she can, then at 145 pounds, you've got Kayla Harrison and you've got Amanda Nunes as real viable opponents for sensational super fights in the future, man. And who knows, in 3 years' time, there might even be more superstars that have come through into the UFC to fatten out that division a little bit at 145. Because let's be honest, all the real talent is at 135. 145 isn't really stacked, is it? But there are two big names there that we've just mentioned that could provide massive, massive fights in about 3 years from now. And like I said, she's still a baby, 25 years of age. She's caught the game in boxing, so I'm fully supportive of her pushing herself athletically to see if she can cut it.
I'm super excited for her, you know, and I think it's brilliant for mixed martial arts that somebody of such high profile is moving over again. But again, I just think the world of boxing needs to have a look at the situation out there for female athletes. Why is Clarissa Shields arguably the biggest star, the biggest meal ticket in all of female boxing? Why is she at 25, just coming into her peak, more than likely? Why is she having to transition to a different sport?
Hmm.
You know,
it's competition and money. There's no competition for her now. She's clocked it and she ain't getting paid.
There you go. Exactly. Exactly.
Hmm.
It's great. I'd say it's great for MMA and I'm super excited for Clarissa Shields. And if it gets us closer to, you know, a potential fight with Amanda Nunes down the line, whether it's in a boxing ring or inside the octagon or both, I'm all for it, man. Anything that gives these girls the opportunity to become even bigger stars and show everybody out there that females can absolutely fight, I'm 100% down for. I would love to see her fight Savannah Marshall still, though. And there's still talk of her. She is going to still compete in boxing, apparently. But how long that goes on for, I don't know. You can't compete in boxing and MMA at the highest level, or certainly no one's managed to successfully do it in the past, and be a world champion in two different sports at the same time. Hey, maybe Clarissa Shields will be the first one.
Maybe. Let's turn our attention towards the action at the weekend just gone, because Anthony Smith saved his career, in my opinion, mate. He's had a horrific year, hasn't he, really, in the octagon. And I know that it hasn't been pleasant outside with the burglary and all that type of carry on. But at the weekend, given a mad card, I mean, before you even get to fights, mate, just madness that the amount of fights now that have fallen off because of this pandemic and COVID, I think that just kind of shows where the world's at right now. Every single day I seem to be flicking through my social media and we're losing fights, losing another fight. For example, the Kevin Holland fight, which we were supposed to be talking about coming up with Jack Hermanson, that got pulled. And then he's got himself another fight booked for the week after against Jacare. It's just mad how quick this is moving at the moment. And if you're not fully on it as a fan, you can kind of miss a lot of the things that are moving. So hopefully you've come to us here at Fight Disciples to try and keep you abreast of the whole situation. But at the weekend, we were supposed to get Curtis Blaydes, weren't we, and Derek Lewis. Curtis Blaydes tested positive for COVID, so therefore we lost our main event. And therefore, Anthony Smith, who was on the main card, was then boosted to a main event. There was a back and forth. Is it three rounds? Is it five rounds? Is it three rounds? Is it five rounds? That went on for a day or two. They ended up getting it finalised. Devin, who he was fighting at the weekend, Devin Clark, he lost his mother in the week as well. So therefore, there was a chat. Is he all right? Is he going to pull out? What's the situation with that? I mean, fucking massive nuts on Devin Clark because he ended up deciding to fight and come through that. So the topsy-turvy narrative of just getting to a main event at the weekend was absolutely bonkers. But as it all played out, Anthony Smith most certainly needed a win, mate. Absolutely needed a win and got it in really fantastic fashion. Even though the narrative, we can make excuses as to why it happened, it's still a W and it's still a first-round submission win. And he keeps his place in the UFC because there was a real threat that they might be looking at him going, his time's done.
Yeah, listen, I don't know what his time's done because he's still ranked in the top 10, but, you know, two defeats against other guys in the top 10, a defeat to Devin Clark, not only knocks him out of the rankings, but really would have fucking, it would have kicked him in the nuts in terms of him being a light heavyweight contender. And he just becomes an absolute marked man. You know, once you slip out of the top 10, I think the UFC then start using you as a bit of a stepping stone for the young, hungry killers that are looking to make a name for themselves. So it would have been a disaster for Anthony Smith. But, you know, once the fight started, you know, it was about levels. And Devin Clark is as good as an All-American wrestler and as big as those legs are and as fucking wild as those hooks are that he throws. When it comes to being an all-round mixed martial artist, Anthony Smith just had way too much experience for him, and you know he practically pulled guard, didn't he? When he got down there, it looked like a black belt against a white belt. That was the disparity really in the jiu-jitsu game. So, buzzing for Anthony Smith. I don't know him personally, but I know Dan and the Raptors speak massively about him. Like, say he's a top guy, and you know, so I'm buzzing for him. That he kind of restaked his claim as a 205 and someone to keep an eye on at 205.
Got a cracking set of teeth now, hasn't he? You know what I mean? Since he's had his teeth
belters
done.
Them. He's proper turkey teeth them,
I'm going to say he's been around with your mates, hasn't he? He's been with Till and Bobby Firmino. That's where he's been, son. They are fucking a right set of gnashes on him.
Proper turkey teeth. I love it. Actually, if he'd been to Turkey, he'd have a full head of hair now as well. So maybe he never went to Turkey for them, but they are belters, like they are absolute belters them. Just on the card itself, you know, it'd be easy to give this card a kicking and the card coming this weekend because, you know, it doesn't necessarily, you know, hold star power, but you've just got to stand back and, you know, fucking applaud the UFC and not just the matchmakers and Dana White for just relentlessly pushing on with these events every week, but also the fighters, man. You know, it's kind of going back to it's almost like Bruce Lee, Enter the Dragon style. Listen, I'm fit. I'm turning up in Vegas. At the moment, I'm supposed to be fighting him. But let's be honest, I'm game to fight anyone.
Mate, we've had situations where people are due to commentate at the weekend and then they've ended up fighting. You know, people, I'm cornering this guy, but whilst I'm cornering this guy, I'm going to do a bit of commentary, then I'll corner it, and then I'll jump in and fight. Fucking madness. The whole thing has been absolute madness. And we've been blessed. We've been blessed because from May the 9th, we have had some stellar cards, some stellar matchups that we've all been thoroughly excited by. Yeah, with all the narratives that played out the weekend, it was inevitable it was going to happen at some point with all this COVID shit that's going on, that you're going to get a card that you look at and you go, oh, not really into that. But when you actually, if you'd have watched it, there was some fucking mega fights on there. Like on last week's show, I said, keep an eye on Miguel Beza, man. He's coming through. He's doing his thing. He's undefeated. He's absolute mustard. And look at the performance that he put on at the weekend. And I've no doubt now that a lot of people who maybe knew a bit about him would have watched that because of he's been boosted up a card. He's now the co-main on a card that kind of, I mean, it delivered. People will have still been with it by the time you get to the co-main. And the way that he went about his work and got the finish, people now will be going, I'll fucking keep an eye out for him because he's mustard.
Yeah, he's brilliant. I thought he was the one that he'd come away. He's the one that pretty much stole the show, isn't he? You know, he's 10-0 now in his mixed martial arts career. I think that was his, he won on Contender Series. Then that was his third consecutive win inside the UFC. Two performance of the night bonuses, including the one against Sato at the weekend, and his first submission as well, a jiu-jitsu black belt, getting his first ever submission. But, you know, watching him fight, you can see that Puerto Rican in him. You can see his stand-up, his boxing's lovely. You know, real nice boxer, really comfortable with his hands. And like Takashi Sato, he looks like a mixed martial artist, Sato, just a big, tough, you know, cauliflower eared up to bits, audible big southpaw Japanese dyed hair fucking lunatic that you just think, no way would I want to roll with him. But Baezla's more like lean, trim. You know, he looks like an athlete. And yet there was times with Sato that he was just picking him up and putting him down. Like he was outboxing him with that slick 1-2. And that's all he needed was the 1-2. He couldn't miss at times. But he was snapping back Sato's head. And then, as I said, when they did get in the clinch, out of nowhere, Baezla just picked him up and slapped him on his back. And I'm like, Christ, you know, you don't look much. You look super lean like a fighter, like a boxer. But you've obviously got strength. Like, he's obviously got strength as old Caramel Thunder, which is a belter of a name, by the way. And listen, anyone that goes 10-0 and clocks up, finishes over Matt Brown, albeit an aging Matt Brown,
yeah,
and a tough guy like Sato as well, mate, you'll do for me. You know, the kid's never been to three rounds. His finishers all come in a second round. So he's definitely worth looking out for. And don't be surprised if they get that Baez out again before Christmas, because he hardly took a shot. He looked brilliant.
Mm. What were the other highlights for you over the weekend before I move on to this madness, another card that has been shifted around, which originally had our mate Darren Till on, didn't it?
Yeah, it sure did. The other standout, Spike Carlisle, just being a lunatic, but it's all good and well being a big ginger-haired lunatic.
He got his pants pulled
but
down.
But you've got to actually fucking win fights, yeah. You can't just walk forward and get beat up. The Parker-Porter scrap was pretty good with Parisian, the two heavyweights, that Parisian, just fucking crazy chin, but Parker Porter, I was quite impressed with him for a big fleshy guy like me. Mm. He knows what he's doing. One thing I wanted to talk about, a great finish. The Jonathan Pierce knockout was cool as well. But the one point, and it was the post-fight interview with Norma Dumont Viana.
Yeah.
The Brazilian girl. Now, she looked amazing, by the way, against Ashley Evans-Smith. I thought she looked really good. And we would usually give her a bit of a kick and no for missing weight. She weighed in at 139.5 pounds, obviously 3.5 pounds over the 136 that was allotted for their fight. Now, again, on paper, she deserves a kicking. We always do. If you miss weight by more than 3 pounds, and she did, then you deserve to get your 30% taken off you and everything else. But the post-fight interview was really interesting. And that was the fact that she mentioned, and it was something that I've spoken about in past with certain nutritionists, and it's something the UFC are heavily invested in researching and gaining data on at the moment. And that's the fact that Viana said that she'd never missed weight before, or certainly never missed weight like this before. But she said it was her time of the month, basically. And she was like, I'm carrying a lot of water weight, and you don't understand how difficult it is and how your body changes and everything else. And, you know, she tried not to make a big deal of it, but it was important that she mentioned that, because I don't think not enough female fighters, and we do see a larger percent of female fighters missing weight compared to men. And this familiar 2 or 3 pound differential keeps popping up as well. Now, you know, again, the UFC are aware of it. The UFC are putting a lot of sports science behind it, the crunching data behind it. But maybe it's time we look at this as a sport, or MMA looks at it as a sport, and maybe we work something for the female fighters, where, you know, we're allowed a pound discrepancy, aren't we, from championship weight with the men. You know, if that main event, it was a light heavyweight fight, but Anthony Smith and Devin Clark are fully in their contractually allowed to make 206. They're allowed to have a pound because it's not a championship fight. And we have the same thing for the women, but maybe we look at more of a 2 or 3 pound discrepancy to allow that. Now, of course, listen, like anything, when money's involved and competition involved, your argument would be, well, then the women will always make 138 pounds instead of 136, because they will always be trying to gain that advantage. And maybe there's some truth in that, but I also think that if you are a 135-pound female fighter and you're serious about competing for the title, you can't always weigh in at 138 pounds, because the argument would be, well, you've never come within touching distance of championship weight. Maybe that's when you kind of put a bit more pressure on and say, well, you need to be as near as you can to 135 to be allowed to fight for the title. I don't know. I just think we need to realize that female bodies are very completely different from male bodies. They hold on to water completely differently. What, depending on the time of the month, can depend on how your body is retaining water and everything else, and where your hormones are at. So I think there could be a big move there. So instead of kicking Viana when she's down for missing weight, I think we need to understand that, you know, girls are going through this shit, man, and we need to fucking allow them the opportunity to let their bodies dictate play.
No, I agree with you. I think we've come across it quite a lot recently, haven't we? And there's been the odd fighter that has brought it up in pre and post fight interviews. Listen, I'm a bloke. I don't fully understand the menstrual cycle. I don't understand what that does to a woman's body. I don't understand
me
how.
Caveman. Well, me caveman.
Listen, you could talk to me and tell me as much as you want, but I'm never going to experience it, am I? So I'm not, until you fully experience it, then you're not going to fully understand it. And I think you're 100% right. It's science. So therefore, I'm sure it can be scientifically proven, these things, at particular times. Yes. So if a girl is waning, contracted at 135, and she weighs in at 138, and she said, listen, it's my time of the month, then I'm sure there is a doctor's note. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a little bit flippant with you, but there's a doctor, there's a way that you can say, yep, she is actually menstruating at this moment in time. So therefore, you've got to allow her 2-3 pounds or whatever it is that they come up with. I think you're 100% right. It needs to be looked at, because the last thing you want is for somebody to be booked in for a title fight. It's not her fault that it's been booked in and it just coincides with a menstrual cycle. So therefore, there's got to be some type of leeway for that moment, you know?
Because I know a lot of fighters and girls that wouldn't need to be on the pill because, you know, maybe they're in same-sex relationships. But I know a lot of fighters, girls are forced to take the pill to try and control that cycle.
Yeah.
Well, that's not fair, because now you're throwing more chemicals into the mix as well.
Yeah.
Now you're throwing everything even further into the air. So I do think we need to have a little bit more science into it. I just thought, you know, it's something we jump on all the time. Fucking hell, that's not missing weight. That's failing to make weight. But she lost 30% of her pace. You know, and she's making her UFC debut. Yeah. So her purse was probably only about, I don't know, 8 grand, 10 grand anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, she's doubled the money. Imagine she'd lost.
Yeah.
You know, she's getting 10 grand, she's lost. So now she's going home with 7 grand. She's just done an entire fight camp.
Hmm.
You know, so anyway, listen, it's the same for Ashley Evans-Smith. You could argue Ashley Evans-Smith made weight, but was it that time of the month for Ashley Evans-Smith? I don't know, but anyway, I just wanted to record it on the old podcast for posterity, man, to say that we talked about it.
Now then, does anybody actually want to fight Jack O'Manson? Doesn't look like it, does it? Putting themselves in COVID situations and injury situations in order to avoid a knock with this strangler. He's got one, though. And I'm, listen, if Till's listening, just shut your ears for a second, right? Because out of all the three fighters that O'Manson's been matched up with, fan-wise, if I take my bias out of this situation for a second, fan-wise, Marvin Vettori is the most attractive fight, I think, because he's a fucking lunatic. Vettori, O'Manson, this weekend, actually a cracking fight, because I think we had questions over what level Kevin Holland really is at. Is it going to be a one-sided strangulation in the first round? Because that was possible, because of how good O'Manson is. And you knew full well that a fight with Till was going to be a high-level chess match. Who's going to commit first? So therefore, that could be quite a difficult watch. I think this weekend's a cracking watch.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. I think Jack O'Manson strangles and submits Kevin Holland. I truly do. And I think Darren Till cleans out Jack O'Manson in the first round.
Of course you do.
I think what we've got now is Melvin Vettori coming in, who is a madman. You're right. He is a complete Bond villain.
Did you just call him Melvin? Did you just call Marvin. Him? I thought you called him Melvin. Must be my headphones. Melvin's a wonderful name. All right, Mel.
That's their kid, Melvin. Melvin's their kid.
Melvin Vettori. I'm going to change that now. I'm going to call him Melvin.
But it's a wonderful opportunity for Melvin, isn't it? Because, you know, he's coming in. It's a battle of Europe now. You know, with Till unavailable, these guys can go, boom, let's get it on, man. Let's see who's the best middleweight in Europe. You know, it would have been nice to... I wonder if Darren Stewart got the call. You know, I wonder if Darren Stewart maybe had this opportunity. But obviously, Marvin was down to fight the following week. And that's why they've basically swapped opponents, haven't they? You know, Marvin's coming here and Kevin's been pushed back to take on Jacare. But what I like about it is the fact that, like Hermanson, Marvin Vettori is very much a submission fighter. You know, most of his UFC, most of his finishes in his career have come via submission. He is a brown belt in BJJ. And he's based out of London Shoe Fighters, or he was based out of London Shoe Fighters for a long time. Very strong BJJ. School that they've got there. I think he's over with. Well, he'd have been training with in the shadow of Mike Tyson the last few days. He's at King's MMA now with my boy Rafael Cadeiro, rounding out his game completely. But when you look at it, you know, his losses in the UFC have come against Israel Adesanya. That split, and that was a split decision, by the way, against Israel Adesanya. That was 2 years ago. So, and since then, he's gone 3-0, and a performance of the night bonus last time out. So, you know, he deserves this opportunity, Vettori. Obviously, again, just the situation that we're in right now. You know, Vettori has travelled to Vegas a couple of weeks early to acclimatise, get inside the COVID bubble. He's fighting Jacare, massive name, big opportunity. And then suddenly, little knock on his hotel room door, someone from the UFC walks in, right, you're not going to believe this. Our main event coming up on next Saturday is actually got COVID, Kevin Holland, and he was a replacement. So we're thinking about moving Kevin back to your spot to take on Jacare. And Marvin's like, whoa, 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 what do you mean? No, no, no. And they go, because we're going to offer you the main event against Jack Manson. Boom. Bo Diggity, let's go. So Vettori has to bring his cuff forward a week, everything else. But you know what? That's the beauty of mixed martial arts. It would never happen in boxing because boxers are just too precious about their own. And there's so many people in their ears saying, no, this is not the best thing for us. Marvin Vettori's looked at it and gone, yeah, man, I can bring my weight cuff forward a week. Listen, I was planning on fighting Jacare anyway. Jacare's a submission fighter too. You know, Hermanson's younger and stronger, yes, but, you know,
mate, at the end of the day,
it's
well.
The main event. Yeah, it's exactly. A headline spot. Yeah. It's a five-rounder. And it's not like for him, it's not like they've said, right, you're not fighting Jacare now, a jiu-jitsu guy. You're fighting Darren Till, a stand-up striker, where Vettori has to throw the baby out with the dishwater. Vittori's still fighting a submission guy. The ballsy one here, you've got to say, is probably Jack Hermanson. Jack Hermanson's gone from doing a fight camp to face Till.
Yeah.
Then they've gone, right, we're switching up now. We're giving you Kevin Holland, very much a wrestler. Okay, no problem. I'll take on Kevin Holland. Then with a week to go, right, you're not fighting Kevin Holland now. You're fighting Vettori, who's very much a submission fighter. And Jack Hermanson, to his credit, hasn't turned anyone down. As he's just gone, mate, I'm in Vegas. I'm main eventing. I can't wait. I'm fucking, whoever it is, I'm fighting. I love it, man. I love that shit.
There's a fight on here. Do you remember... I think we might have actually been on commentary for his last fight. Roman Dolidze. Do you remember him?
Yep.
The big grizzly Georgian with the unbelievable hairy chest. Everybody's waxed in the UFC, aren't they? You know what I mean? Everybody's in... He looks like he's wearing a fucking T-shirt, this fella. Full of hair all over his body. Like a big grizzly bear. But he's a lunatic. Absolute lunatic. And he is fighting John Allen this weekend. It's in the light heavyweight contest. He's undefeated, is Dolidze, and I fully anticipate him to come through. But watch him, because he's just captivating to watch because of... He's like a doorman, isn't he? He's like the guy that's like a lunatic at your fucking local boozer who's manning the karaoke. He's fun. That's where it's at, mate. And he's on the main card this weekend.
They're all finished... Allen. Yeah, they're all fillers. They're all finishers as well from Roman, the crazy Georgian man. They're all he looks like he looks like Leonidas, doesn't he? From 300.
Perfect.
You know, he's all man. Put it this way: when he's stripped off, you could literally light a match on his chest. He's that guy. 7-0, all finishers. I know before he got in the UFC, his highlight reel was like a spinning back fist. He's just he's a fucking mad as a box of frogs, and that's why he's got himself on the main card, man. You get in the UFC. You fucking throw everything in the kitchen sink and get finishes. You're going to get moved onto main cards rapidly.
Looking forward to him. What's the one that you're looking out for this weekend, man?
Well, it's certainly not Gian Vellante fighting a heavyweight, to put it that way.
Why?
Jesus Christ. Because he's a middleweight that no longer wants a cut weight.
He's just lazy, isn't he? Taking on Jack Collier.
He's just lazy. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know how he's still in the UFC. I really don't. That's I'm certainly not looking out for that one.
I bet it's an amazing fight now, man.
Probably. You know what? I'll start at the very bottom. Lewis Smolka versus Jose Quinones, the first fight on the prelims. Mate, that will be an absolutely mental fight. Honestly, both those guys are top-ranked flyweights, or they should be. They're fighting up a bantamweight, obviously. Smolka's coming up, but Quinones, I think he's only lost to... He lost to Nathaniel, didn't he? And then, what's his name? Sugar Sean. Lost to Sugar Sean, man. I think that could be a little smoke show. And then I'm going to give you the first fight on the main card as well. Just purely because that Movsar Evloev, you'll remember, He's the guy that fought Mike Grundy on the Fight Island card.
Mm.
And do you remember, everyone was like, oh, this guy's like the world's best wrestler. You know, he's a complete monster. He won everything in wrestling back in Russia. He's this, he's that. And then Mike Grundy goes and out.
First round, yeah.
Goes and out wrestles him in the first round and nearly subs him. And you're like, go ahead, Grundy is right. And then to his credit, man, that Evloev just evolved his game and somehow fucking turned into some kind of world champion Russian boxer and absolutely boxed the socks off Mike Grundy. So I'm definitely looking out for him again just because he was outstanding on that night. He's taken on a bit of a veteran as well in that Nate the Train Landwehr, who, I don't know, he's got to be into his mid-30s now. But I know he had a good win over Darren Elkins last time out, which has obviously landed him this opportunity. So, man, that's where I'm going to go, yeah. I'm going to go with the first fight on the card, Smoker Canoes. And my other tip is Evloev for the performance of the night against Nate Landwehr in the first fight on the main card as well.
A couple of fights that have been made over the last week, and this is all because of COVID things and various aspects, people pulling out of fights and injuries and what have you. We've kind of mentioned a few of them, haven't we? With stuff being put back and replaced and what have you. A fight that I'm really into is Burgos versus Dawoodu. We've been big fans of both of these guys. Burgos took on Emmett earlier on this year and will probably feature in our award ceremony conversation at the end of the year for BT Sport as Fight of the Year, because anybody that watched Shane Burgos and Josh Emmett go at it right at the start of when we came back after lockdown will fully appreciate that that was one hell of a fight. Well, Burgos is taking on Hakan Dawoodu, who we've all been massive fans of over the last 12 months or so. That is an absolute banger of a fight. Real belter. You're going to get that one on January the 23rd. Who's fighting on January the 23rd? Can't remember. But it's happening on Fight Island, so we might even get to be cage side for that one, my man. Could be a cracker.
It will be a cracker, yeah. Always brings a bit of fun to the table, don't they? So there's a few real good fights that's been made recently, man, and that's just one of them.
I know what you want. You want me to talk about Dariush, don't you? Because you are... Yes. Do you know, like Dan's on the Charles Oliveira train, you're on the Beniel Dariush train, aren't you? It's like bingo. When we do our BT Open match show, it's like fucking Charles Oliveira, Dariush bingo. When either just shoehorning the names into conversations that are absolutely irrelevant to a period. Just shoehorning your guy in. Are you on commission? Are you on like 5% or something every time they get a fight or something?
I don't know what Dan's situation is with Oliveira, but obviously my situation is the fact that it was, bloody hell, it must have been about 5 or 6 years ago now. And I was chatting with Rafael Cadeiro, just to name drop here again. And do you know what? We might have even been in Abu Dhabi. It might have been one of the very first Abu Dhabi tournaments. But I'm going back to, like, you know what, 2012, something like that, 2013. So a few years ago now. And I remember chatting with Rafael about his team and all that and blah, 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 whatever was going on. I think he was training Vanderlei at the time and this and that.
Fucking hell. Do you want to pick all these names up that you just keep dropping here?
Clang, clang, clang. And I think we were just shooting the shit. And like we always do, you know, you do it as, and I do it all the time. When you get a quiet moment with a coach, certainly someone of that caliber, you always have a little... So any young bucks coming through in the camp at the moment?
Who can I have as my prospect of 2021?
Yeah, exactly. Anyone coming through? And I remember Rafael said to me, he went, listen, I've got this jiu-jitsu absolute wizard and I'm just transitioning him into MMA now. I'm working on his hands, working on his kickboxing. But he's a real star. Make sure you look out for him.
Mm.
And it was Beniel Dariush. And so obviously for that reason, I was just like, okay, I'm all over the Dariush fight train now.
Yeah, but over the last 12 months, it's really come to fruition, hasn't it? He's stepped up, man.
Yeah,
I mean,
man.
He's really started to become a bit of a name and really make a bit of a play on that top five, six in the lightweight division, hasn't he?
He has, absolutely. You know, and you could argue his matchup with Ferreira is part of my lightweight tournament.
Why are you shoehorning him into a tournament that he's not in yet, mate? He's not in his top eight tournament, is he, yet?
Well, that's what I mean. Maybe this should be a part of the tournament.
Over Hooker, over RDA. That's what you're saying, yeah?
Well, I think if Hooker fights RDA, there's my other fight in the tournament.
So now you've got reserve fights going. You've made it a top 10. Right, okay.
Exactly. Ferreira versus Dariush, they're both ranked in the top 10. So, right. Man, they've got to be in the mix. So I love it, man. I love the fact the UFC have listened to our podcast and they've gone away and gone, right, Nick's right. Let's make this 155 tournaments. Let's let the world decide who is the best lightweight on the planet in 2021. And I absolutely put Ferreira Dariush in the mix of my five-round tournament brackets.
Five now. It'll be six next. Yeah. In fact, Claire Guida, is he in there against Johnson? Is that in your tournament? Just as a little bit of a fun one?
It's not 2012.
But that's been made as well for Feb 6th.
The same card Molly's on. Molly McCann's on Feb 6th.
Is that on Fight Island? Has that been confirmed? Because it's two... You would think that they're not just going out for one on January 23rd. You would think that there would be a series of fights.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, you've got, I think, Overeem versus Volkov's the main event, isn't it, as well? I know Overeem likes to travel, but Overeem is based back in Holland these days. Volkov obviously based in Russia. So it would make sense for that fight to happen on Fight Island. The key is to have a look at the undercard and see if any see if there's any Russians on it, any Dagestanis, because that's always a bit of a show and tell if it's going to be on Fight Island. But I'd like to think Connor versus Dustin will either be the pinnacle of Fight Island run of events, or it will be the opening stanza of a fight night run of events. So it'll definitely go either way.
Mm. Hey, interesting at the weekend listening to Dana White speaking, wasn't it, off the back of the event? Because obviously Michael Chandler always now comes up in conversation with fights being made left, right, centre in the lightweight division. We know that Connor and Dustin are going at it. We know that Tony Ferguson's obviously matched up with Oliveira, which is an amazing, amazing fight. You would think that Chandler's name would be there. I mean, he's been very open about wanting to fight in January, hasn't he? So I must get a message every single day from a random fan saying, who do you think it should be, his UFC debut? And my answer now, every single time, it used to be Tony Ferguson. But now that Ferguson's matched up, my answer every single time is Justin Gaethje. Listen, what's the point in coming if you're not going to be involved in the Shark Tank, man? Go and fight. There's no point in having a little tickle with somebody that you could quite comfortably beat just to create some false hype. Go and fight a proper fighter, and the proper fighter is Justin Gaethje.
Yeah, and I think they will make that fight as well. I think it will absolutely get made. Whether they wait until a little bit later in the year, because it's obviously not going to happen now until probably March time, because it is more than likely going to be a main event. But yeah, I think that's the final key in the lightweight bracket, isn't it? You can't have a lightweight tournament without having Justin Gaethje, even though he's just lost, you know, completely one-sided fight to Khabib. Khabib is no longer available, or until now he's no longer available. Obviously, a lot of stuff swirling around at the moment that Khabib and Dana are about to meet in Abu Dhabi any day now for a conversation. But I'm quite happy with Khabib being out the picture for 18 months, of settling it with this tournament, and Justin Gaethje's got to be a key part of that, along with Chandler.
Mm. Interesting. Did you see the Yair Rodriguez references at the press conference? Dana was asked about Yair Rodriguez, and then he gave the most weird of answers. Like, he looked to help off stage, and one of the UFC officials said, "No, we've not announced that yet. We're not talking about that just as of yet." And he went on to say, no, Yair Rodriguez will not be fighting anytime soon. It's not our issue. It's an issue elsewhere. So obviously Twitter goes crazy, doesn't it? What is it? Is it a USADA thing? Is it a legal thing? Is it this? Is it that? It's going to be interesting to see what that is, because Yair Rodriguez is a high-quality caliber of fighter. I can't see them cutting him unless he's done something fucking mad. I've sniffed around. I've done my best to sniff around. I've asked questions and nobody... Well, if they do know, they're not telling me. So I don't know. I don't know what the situation is with that.
No, I never even noticed it, to be honest with you. But, you know, it's not the first time he's had issues with the UFC during his UFC tenure. Like, he's had a strange little relationship with them. But I hope it really doesn't impact on him, because I truly believe Yair Rodriguez now has found himself all over again. You know, he's had those two back-to-back wins over Jeremy Stevens. Well, the second win over Jeremy Stevens. Yeah. And the win over Korean Zombie, of course. But he has been inactive for over a year now, yeah. And it would be a shame because he finally looks like he's going to realize that potential. But he was turning down fights as well. And, you know, if you want to be the best on the planet, you can't turn down fights.
Mm. Now, just to finish off, we know that on December the 19th, we've got one hell of a card headlined by our guy, Leon Edwards, taking on Khamzat Chimaev. Can all these internet news outlets, can you stop telling me that Hamzat's got COVID, right? Don't stop it. Stop putting it out there. I'm only going to take notice from official UFC sources because Sunday night I'm flicking through social media and my fucking little ass went all over the place, didn't it? I said, no, not that one. Because there's so many dropping off at the moment. I've got a couple of notifications popping up and then a couple of guys that we know started retweeting it. I went, no, it can't be true. It can't be true that Khamzat has got COVID and therefore you would think have to pull out of a fight. Now, John Morgan, one of our pals from MMA Junkie, has allegedly spoken to Khamzat Chimaev and his team, and they've come back and said it's fake news, which is great, right? I've got a funny feeling that he does have it, but he don't give a fuck anyway, right? And he's just going to... And he's kind of calculated that I'll be clear in 2 weeks, nobody's going to get hurt, I'll just crack on. So that's where I think Hamzat's at, right? Nah, I'm only messing. I don't know. I don't know whether he has or whether he hasn't, but there was a rumour that went round on Sunday night saying that he had, but John Morgan, within 24 hours, had said that he'd spoken to the team and that it was fake news, which is good. Stop making my heart beat a little bit too fast because that is a fight that I'm really looking forward to. I think everybody needs it. Leon most certainly needs it after a shitty year. Yeah. And fingers crossed we can get that for December the 19th.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, I haven't said this all year and I never thought I would say it, but I've never felt sorry. I feel sorry for COVID if it has infected Khamzat because he fucking kicked that ass as well.
There you go. Thank you very much for tuning in to us. It's been an absolute pleasure once again. You can subscribe to us.
I need to mention this. We shouldn't mention it, but I need to mention it just because I was horrified by it. It was one of the most horrific spectacles I've seen inside what is supposed to be the sport of MMA. Did you see the thing from Russia? The 529-pound man.
Do you really want to talk about that? Why do you want to talk about
against
that?
Against the 139-pound woman. It was absolutely horrific.
Yeah, but you know it's not real. Horrific. People listening to this know that it's not real, don't they? It's not a real representation of MMA.
No.
It's just a fucking joke. No.
Just fucking Russia as well, man. Bonkers Russia just doing whatever they want. This is why the sport, you know, this is why everyone should support the International Mixed Martial Arts Federation, IMAF, and support your local... I'm getting on my soapbox now.
Yeah, you are.
Because I'm part of...
yeah, you are. In fact, this is the thing that I wanted to bring up, right? So check this out. This is what happened last week. While we were in London doing Dubois Joyce Week, right? This idiot here, right? He complained of the size of his room that he was given at the hotel because he was given a box room, whereas I had a nice suite. Yeah, they'd looked after me. So I had my nice little suite. We had a separate room for the television and all this type of stuff. And he says to me, have you changed your password for BT Sport? Because I can't get the football on. And I went, no, I've not changed it, mate. I've just cancelled it. So you can't get on. See, how many people used to hijack my fucking BT Sport login? It's ridiculous. You being one of them. And your dad. Your dad's been at me as well. So you've been fucking handing my passwords around to every fucker whilst they've been watching the bloody Champions League. Anyway, so he says, have you got your laptop on you? I said, yes. I said, can I get on to watch the footy? I said, yeah, no worries. So he comes around. Bear in mind, he'd already ordered beers to my room on my tab, right? So he'd ordered ale to my room. He turned up and he had his laptop in his hand. I said, what are you doing? He goes, oh, I've just got to have this meeting. So he sits down, fires up my laptop to what? Bear in mind, I needed the laptop to edit the fucking videos that we were making last week. Fired up the laptop to watch Liverpool. Sat in my room, this is, yeah? Then he proceeded to have a meeting with all these MMA cronies, Goddard and Molly and all them, right? Fucking on his laptop, on a Zoom call. And listen, you know how loud this fucker is. I couldn't do anything in the room. He just took over the room. I know everything that happened in that meeting. Everything. because of how loud he was, and I was stood in the room next door. Was it a good meeting with your little crew last week? Was it?
Good meeting. But yeah. Listen, everyone should support, because we can get rid of shit like this, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe not.
And then when the meeting finished, yeah? Did he stick around? No. He drunk all the ale. Match had finished. We're not talking about a 5-minute meeting. We're talking about a fucking hour and a half he were on the yakking away. Got up, packed his bags and fucked off. So, right, you can edit that video. You can edit that video now.
You can have your laptop now. You can have your laptop back now, yeah? Continue editing. Jesus. Yeah, you're right, man. Let's not talk about it.
It was a joke. The whole thing in Russia was a joke. Terrific. It's not real representation of MMA.
Terrible.
Anyway, thank you very much for listening to us. If you want to buy yourself some beer this Christmas, keep nicking, keep nicking BT Sports subscriptions, then you can do. By going to our website, fightdisciples.com, proper tackle there. Are you doing a Christmas box? What are you doing for the people? Because I saw that you took over our social media at the weekend doing a Black Friday. Look at you getting all corporate. What's all that about?
We did a Black Friday sale, and that went bonkers as well. The brewery were over the moon. So we give it a real good push on Black Friday. We will be doing some kind of Christmas special. Maybe have something out later this week.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Just to let you know as well, we are down to... I think there's only two or three sizes in single figures with the Black Fight Disciples tee as well. So if you've always wanted a Black Fight Disciples tee, you better get it ordered quickly, because we are down to single figures in small, single figures in large, and I think there's about a dozen or so mediums as well. So once they're gone, they're gone. They will never be made again. That design
there
will never
is.
Be seen
there
again.
There he is.
You've got the exclusive T-shirts. The hoodies have all gone. The socks have all gone. We'll be getting new stock in of everything. Brand new designs in the new year. Unfortunately, I couldn't turn it around before Christmas. But the tees, man. That's the only thing we've got left. Tees and scarves. Tees and scarves. Scarves are going bonkers. Guy in America bought 4 scarves off us this week.
Winter, isn't it?
I've got to send... Sent it yesterday over to Arizona or wherever it was. Arizona. I don't think you need a scarf in Arizona, but hey ho, there you go. So yeah, scarves and tees we've got available. Everything else unavailable. But again, you need to get this stuff now, because we do not do repeat designs. The new designs are coming. Bear with us.
It's fucking sales, isn't it? He sounds like that bloody, what's his name? Barry Scott from Sillet Bang, doesn't he? So get yourself on. FightDisciples.com. Whilst you're on there, everything's there. So you can get the feed for the podcast, feed for the YouTube, feed for the social media. It's all there. Get yourself stuck in. And on iTunes, I've been having a little bit of a nosy through some of the reviews that you've been writing for us. Thank you. It's nice to know that you actually like us and that you keep coming back after week. So hit us up on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. Enjoy the fights this weekend. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.